This is the 17th season of Bass Talk Live with your hosts, Mark Jeffries and Matt Pingrack. BTL is brought to you by Lowrance, Basscat Boats, APCO, Duck and Fishing, Strike King Lures, Sunline, Big Bite Baits, Spro, Exo Lures, Yamagatsu, The Bass Tank, and Denali Rods. BTL coming at you.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome once again to another edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where Gene and I are going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. We're going to continue from yesterday. One of my favorite people, Gene Gillen, in studio. We are so fortunate and lucky. And Gene, the feedback from yesterday's show was quite impressive.
Oh, good. I'm glad we're able to answer some questions and enlighten people a little bit. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, now we have more questions. And Gene did a really cool thing. He went back and he looked at some of the comments that were on the YouTube page, and he's going to dive into some answers of questions that people had. So we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to try and take some phone calls later on. We tested it yesterday. It worked okay. I think it worked fine. Mm-hmm. So we will try to take some phone calls. If you have a question for Gene, I will open up the Sunline hotline and we'll get after it this morning. The first thing, though, Gene, I have a question for you, because I received several emails from people that are kind of like me. They don't really dive into the whole Facebook thing, all right?
Right.
So if they wanted to get one of these absolutely outstanding fizz kits,
right,
what should they do?
I think the easiest thing would be just people can just email me, and if they will send me their contact information, an email address will probably be all we'd need. I can forward that to Barb Elliott, and because she deals pretty much on Facebook instant messaging. In fact, I hardly ever get a hold of her with a text message or even phone calls sometimes. That the Facebook instant messaging is how she rolls. So people can just email me. It's ggilliland@bassmaster.com. And I'll see if we can't connect people and get them the kits that they need. Because Barb's pretty good about, she keeps them stocked up, and she'll get them mailed out to people.
You're kind of turning into the fizz kit broker.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you're doing, Gene.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know what it cost for her to make those things. Probably not a lot, but yeah. But she does put a lot of time into it because they are handmade.
Yeah.
And I think some of the profits actually go back into the New York Bass Nation conservation efforts. So it's a good deal.
All right. Real quick, I have to mention this. This technology cloud, it's kind of hanging over me. I don't know what's going on. But it's not just me. Because yesterday when I was at school, you know, we had this really super nice video board on the football field. Brand new football stadium. And everything is controlled through a TriCaster computer.
Okay.
Well, big game on Friday because we're on Fox. We're the Fox game of the week. And they wanted to make sure that everything is buttoned up and everything's working right. So I go up there yesterday to test the video board. And guess what? It doesn't work. The cameras don't work. We have cameras in the end zones. Then we have a camera at the 50-yard line. And none of them work. So last night I was up there late doing one of these pretty cool stuff, these where they can log in and control your computer without being there.
Right.
So the tech support guy was bumfuzzled. He had no idea what was going on.
Uh-oh.
So he gave me the standard, and I just chuckle at this. And I know people out there have dealt with this when you're dealing with tech support people. What's the first thing they say, Gene?
Reboot.
Have you rebooted the computer? Why are you even saying that, human being? And I was just glad it was a human being on the other end.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Right.
So, yeah, we're kind of in a quandary. And then somebody sends me an email late last night that another bass fishing podcast couldn't go on last night because guess what? They had software issues.
Power surges.
I don't know what to say, man. But I did do the coach's show last night, and everything went flawless.
Well, there you go.
There wasn't anything wrong with the coach's show last night.
Progress.
So, I don't know. I'm starting to get a complex here about bad technology events following me around. So, it is what it is. All right. We're going to get into some of the questions, but I do want to mention this. And for those that may not be aware, next week, a big, big event. I believe it's next week in Springfield. All right, I'm right on that. Big event in the industry. The Hall of Fame ceremonies are going to take place in Springfield. And my man to the right is going to be inducted into the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame. And absolutely 100% well-deserved. And Gene, it's really cool to see you get that honor.
Thank you. It's very humbling. You know, I'm going in with this year's class, Trip Weldon.
Well-deserving.
Bassmaster tournament director for many years. And Jason Lucas, who was the first fishing editor for Sports Afield magazine, really kind of brought bass fishing to the masses via Sports Afield magazine back in the day. So, and we're also inducting last year's class because of COVID, we didn't have a banquet.
Right.
And the induction ceremony. So we've got five other individuals from last year that are going to be there. Jay Yellis and Steve Bowman, Ron Linder, who passed away not too long ago, Brian Kirchel, and I'm forgetting the fifth one. But it'll come to me eventually. But, hey, I'm old, so forgive me.
Senior moment, man. Yeah. I have those all the time. Yeah. All the time.
But it's a great, great event. We have a starting on Tuesday through the Thursday banquet, we will have an online auction.
Like what happened last year, what took place last year with the auction?
Yeah. And you and Matt donated your combo bowling fishing trip.
Yeah, are we doing that again?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to mention that then. I was not aware. It was kind of gray there, Gene. I had no idea. I haven't really talked to Matt about it.
Well, that was in the 2 weeks, you know. So
so we're in. I love that. And we'll get into what that is and when they can bid. They can do it beginning on Tuesday, right?
I think the auction goes live on Tuesday.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a good deal.
All right, as far as the auction, here it is, folks. You get the opportunity to go fish with Matt. And let me tell you something. If you're really into the whole dink and dunk thing and spinning rods and reels, you can't pass this up because I don't think there's anybody better out there than dinking and dunking. We're going to see some dinking and dunking this week, too, at Lake Norman. But if you want to go out, spend a day with Matt, bid on it. Last year, it was one of the top things that went out. And then the other thing that's going to be a part of that, JD, our man in Illinois, won it last, or didn't win it, was the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. You get to spend a day with me, an evening of food and beverage and bowling.
There you go.
All right, so spend a day on the water with Matt, going around catching 2 and 3 pounders. With the spinning rod and reel.
Yeah.
And then come hang out with Matt and myself at the bowling center. We'll get some pizza. We'll get some beverages. And we'll do a little bowling. And here's the deal, too. I am willing to offer this up. Just in case somebody out there doesn't want to dink and dunk around, you can go out with me. All right? We'll have a fantastic time. We ain't going to be fishing any bridge pilings or boat docks doing this. All right?
Power fishing.
And looking down. You're not going to have to do exercises in your neck from all the looking down that you're going to be doing, looking down at the graph. No, 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 no. We will go throw a topwater.
There you go.
All right? We'll throw a crankbait. Heck, we might even throw a Carolina rig. Maybe.
Maybe.
All right? Depending on what time of the year. So, hey, I have nothing against that, man. You want to go out and you want to finesse fish? there is hardly anybody better to go out with than Matt. If you want to go out and have a good time and forget about what electronics you're looking at and what you're looking down at, right? You can hang out with me. I'll make arrangements. I'm sure I could get a day off from school, you know, and go out and hang out and just have a good time. Then we'll go kegel, and you can kick my butt on the lanes if you want to. I'm okay with that. I know one thing. You're going to eat well, and you're going to stay hydrated. How about that, Gene?
There you go.
All right. So
you got the important parts covered.
Yeah. I obviously, folks, I'm just having a little fun here with my man that usually sits to my right. All right.
No, that's but, good. That's
you know,
good.
I'll take it out. You can go out in the old relic, the old retirement boat that I have,
mm-hmm.
of which still it's 15 years old. Guess how many hours on the motor, Gene?
15.
Oh, I'm up. No, I'm up to 29 now. It's got to be the fewest hours on a 15-year-old motor wow. in the entire nation. Yeah, I'm up to 29 hours on it.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. And do you know where Lake X is? Do you know what Lake X is
I do.
That we're talking about?
I do, yeah.
Does that surprise you? I don't want to get too deep into that, but...
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, we have 40, 50 fish days at this place.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And never see another boat.
And it's public water.
Yeah, but everybody else out there, they're doing something else.
Yeah.
They're right. Striper fishing.
Yeah.
No. They're not striper fishing. Anyway, folks, at the auction, JD had a great time last year. It's for a great cause. And like I said, seriously, if you want to spend a fantastic day on the water with Matt, you know, the bidding starts on Tuesday. If you want to hang out and have some fun and some really good bowling center food, hey, we'll take care of you on that. All right, I can guarantee you this: there's no way Matt's beat me at bowling. All right, he may kick my butt all the time, and I might be 1-8 or whatever it is on the water, but he will not defeat me on the lanes.
There you go.
All right, and by the way, Gene had some great photos and. I can't pull them up, but that when was it? The Grand Lake event, we got a bunch of the guys, and there is a bowling center in Grove, Oklahoma, and we actually got a bunch of the guys. And the one photo that Gene sent me, I'll see if I can get it pulled up before the end of the show. It was me trying to tell Derek Remitz what to do, and Gene, he was in full chops, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Those chops were just epic. On the sideburn chops that he was wearing. And that was such a fun time. We did that like 3 or 4 times with the guys. But definitely bringing back a lot of memories, Gene.
Yeah, I like I said yesterday, I was kind of going through down memory lane and found a bunch of these pictures. And that's the one you're talking about.
That's it, yeah.
And you know, and I think it's like the first time Derek Remitz had ever bowled, and Mark was trying to give him some instructions. But speaking of memory lane, I brought another little piece of memorabilia.
What is this? Oh my gosh!
Check this out.
Now Matt and I talked about those.
Yep, that's the official Team Bass Zone jersey.
What year was that?
I don't know. I can't remember. It was a long time ago.
It was in the 90s, I think.
Yeah, late 90s, early 2000s, something like that.
And there's a story behind those jerseys, Gene, because Sublimation was far, far, far away.
Yeah, the thing weighs about 20 pounds.
It was pretty heavy. You know what kind of shirt that is? Does it have the tag in it?
It does. It does. I don't
there remember. It is right there. They probably can't see it. I don't have the other camera set up.
It's a Mo Betta shirt.
Maury Tate. And those were built, all those cowboy shirts were built in Oklahoma, and I cannot remember the name of the town, toward Latonka.
Yeah, somewhere down there. He was a rodeo guy.
Yeah, and he did a bunch of commercials for Chevrolet. You remember they had those Mo Betta commercials that he did for Chevrolet? Man, I wish I could remember. It was like around Anadarko and Chickasha.
And these were the official Bass Zone colors back then. This purple and yellow. And
hideous. And there's the hat.
Yeah.
The purple and yellow hat sitting up there.
But we We all the people on the team.
Apache, that's it. Thank you.
Got these shirts. We had an event down at Lake Fork, where the whole team went down to Lake Fork and fished kind of a little semi tournament, little derby.
Hey, you should auction that off, Gene. That might get $10. I still have mine somewhere. I don't know where it is.
Yeah.
It's around here somewhere. Apache, that's it.
There you go.
But I remember that so vividly. I went down there and I met with the marketing person for Mobetta, and I said, I want to make some jerseys. And they're like, jerseys? We do cowboy shirts. I go, I know, but I think there's some stuff that we can do here. And we went through like 12 different designs. And I think the first 11 were all those long sleeve kind of cowboy look.
Right.
I was ahead of my time with that, though.
Yeah.
Right. Because the only thing that was even remotely close to that was the Crown Royal jerseys for the Crown Royal team. You remember that?
Yeah.
Remember they had the Ford Excursions and the trucks and the purple boats, and it was quite the iconic brand that we have talked about on this show, as far as that was really kind of the first non-endemic that you could really, really significantly notice that was not tied into the fishing industry at all.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. It really was. But they were fantastic to deal with. I don't even know if they still make shirts. Do you know?
I have not kept up with it. I have no idea. No idea. But
come on, Gene. You probably have like a closet full of Mobetta shirts, don't
no.
you?
No.
Cowboy hat? Do you have a cowboy hat?
I do not even have a cowboy hat.
What?
No, sure don't.
You would look good in a cowboy hat.
Well, I don't know.
When's your birthday? What month is your birthday?
It's already passed.
Okay, so get me lined up for next year. What month?
June.
I got plenty of time. I'm going to hook you up, man. we're going to get the new Gene look. The Gene, Mean Gene look. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, the whole cowboy thing never really rubbed off with me. People used to kid me when I graduated from Texas A&M. It's like, okay, I didn't learn to two-step, I didn't learn to chew tobacco, and I didn't learn to play dominoes or wear boots. So how could I have even gotten out of school? How could I have possibly graduated from college? But somehow I did. So it just never rubbed off on me that much.
Well, a lot of people are saying you need to sport the cowboy hat at the HOF induction. That would be cool.
Well, you know, they at the Classic in Fort Worth, they had cowboy hats for a lot of the people on stage.
Yeah.
Of course, we're always backstage in those events, so we didn't.
Or understage.
Or understage. We didn't. Yeah, so we didn't get the hats.
All right. Well, folks, once again, the bidding is going to start on Tuesday. Where do they need to go, Gene? What website? Do you know? Is it the same one?
It's bassfishinghof.com. Bass Fishing HOF, the initials, Hall of Fame.
All right, and there'll be a link there where you can click on the link.
There's a link to a BidPal site where the online auction is, and you register and go through all that process. But yeah, they got some cool stuff this year. A lot of signed jerseys, a lot of fishing tackle. There's a bunch of fishing trips with MLF and Elite Series pros. So and of course a trip with Mark and Jeff and Matt to
Fish and Bowl. Fish and Bowl.
The Fish and Bowl.
That's it. So Pins and Fins, that's what I call it, Gene.
There you go. So it's a lot of good stuff.
All right. Great stuff. And once again, there is a well-deserved wait for Gene to be in the Hall of Fame. Nobody is more deserving than Gene. And man, I know the fans, I know I greatly appreciate you coming in and passing along a wealth of knowledge when it comes to fish care and answering everybody's questions if you have one. And it's kind of a rare opportunity, but Gene and I have kind of talked, and we're going to try to get Gene on the show a little more often, you know, maybe once every 5-6 weeks, something like that. He can jump in here and give you guys an opportunity to bounce stuff off Gene and just kind of add a little bit more to the meal of BTL with Gene coming on board for a few sessions. So definitely looking forward to that. All right, man. What were some of the questions that you followed up on from yesterday's show?
Oh, okay. All right. Let me I just, you know, went through the chat on the YouTube and wrote a few things down just to kind of cap off some of the discussion from yesterday. One of the things about fizzing that we didn't cover was how much air do you let out? How long do you let the bubbles come out of the of the needle? And what you'll see in the video that's on Bassmaster.com, which everybody has to, that's required learning. You've got to go to Bassmaster.com, conservation section, and look at those fizzing videos. But you'll find that when the fish is floating, as you start letting the bubbles out, if you hold your hand under the fish, as the fish starts to get neutrally buoyant, you'll start to feel the weight of the fish against your hand. That's when you pull the needle out. Mm-hmm. You don't want to let out so much air that the fish sinks like a rock. So the idea is to get it back to where it's neutral and it can remain upright on its own. So it's not the same for every fish. It's not like you count to 10 and you're done. Depends on how much air, how extended that swim bladder is. So some fish, it may be very quick. Others, it may take 20 seconds. You may have a lot of bubbles come out before that fish regains that neutral position. A couple other things that I noticed on the comments, people were wanting to know about what happens to fish that are released at the same site over and over and over. How do they redistribute? There have been a lot of studies done for where fish were tagged and they were recaptured later, or some of them even had radio transmitters in them.
The chips.
Yeah.
Did they have chips in them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you could track them around the lake and figure out where they go. And for the most part, what we found is that fish generally hang out in the area of the release for several months sometimes. It kind of depends on the season. If it's warm weather, they tend to move away faster. If it's cold weather, they tend to stay put a little bit longer. You got to think, though, about a fish that's been displaced maybe 20 or 30 miles on a big reservoir. They don't know where home is. And so they're not going to be able to go home and be back where they were. Now, there are the rare occasions where somehow that fish figures out he's got that internal GPS, and they will find their way back many miles. Smallmouth are better at it than largemouth for some reason.
Smarter fish,
maybe a little, they just have a bigger home range, and they tend to roam more anyway.
Yeah.
But for the most part, one of the reasons we use release boats is try to move fish away from some of those highly used areas around the marinas and the docks and the boat ramps. And we're not trying to take the fish home. We're just trying to spread them out a little bit. And they'll find new places to live. The studies have shown that for the most part, those fish, since they don't know where home is, they create a new home. And they will set up a new home territory within a few miles of where they've been released. So for the most part, it's not a problem in terms of stockpiling all of those fish in one area. You know, a lot of people, if you fish tournaments much, you know that there's a lot of folks that fish for retreads. They fish for those fish that have been caught and released, and they catch the fish out of those areas. And those are fish that, for whatever reason, they've found everything they need in that new home. There's food, there's shelter. They don't need to swim miles and miles away to find a new place to live.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a place where there's not a lot of that, then they are going to move a lot further until they find some place that fits their lifestyle and they can stay put. Another couple of things we talked about were mentioned on the comments were the use of ice in the live wells. This is something that we have recommended for literally decades now. You've got to be cautious with it because you don't want to put too much. What we always recommend is putting enough ice in your live well in the hot summertime to cool the water temperatures down 5 to 7 degrees, no more than 10 degrees. What that does is the water holds a little bit more oxygen. It cools the fish off since they're cold-blooded. It tends to slow their metabolism down a little bit. It helps make them a little bit slimier, which is, that's kind of their first line of defense against infections and stuff. You don't want to cool it down too much, though, because after the weigh-in, those fish kind of get acclimated to a cold live well. Let's say you get it down there, you know, to 55 degrees or something like that. When those fish get released back into 80-degree water, that can actually kill them.
Wow.
They can go, bass are pretty adaptable at going from warm water to cold water. What they can't handle is going from cold water back to warm water. So that's why we don't want to cool our live wells or our release boat or our weigh-in tanks. We try to keep them no more than about 10 degrees different than what the lake water temperature is. But that's enough, and there have been some studies that have proven that that's enough to make a difference in the survival of those fish after they're released.
All right. Follow-up question on that. I know some guys, what they do is they take some of the smaller water bottles, mm-hmm. and they will freeze those water bottles
exactly,
and put those in there. What are your thoughts on that?
That's an easy way to do it. You know, if you don't want to buy bags of ice or blocks of ice, the nice thing about freezing water in a milk jug or a water bottle or a 2-liter Coke bottle or whatever is that it cools the water more slowly over a long period of time. If you dump a bunch of crushed ice in your live well, it cools the water really quickly. And that, if there's fish in there already, that's not as good a deal. But if you've got the jugs of frozen water, then it cools for a longer period of time. Another question that we get a lot about is the chlorine in the ice.
Yeah.
And that's not really a problem because if you think about it, a gallon of water when it's frozen, a 8-pound block of ice, in a 30-gallon live well, that's 1 to 30. The ratio is so small that the amount of chlorine in that ice, which is going to be negligible anyway because most of the chlorine dissipates as the ice freezes, as the water freezes, it's not going to be harmful to the fish. So we never really worry much about the idea of chlorine in the water. Obviously, you don't want to fill your live well with tap water, with city chlorinated water, because that's mm-hmm. a much higher concentration. But what's in the ice is not a real problem.
All right. What about salt?
Salt is the other key ingredient if you're going to have to keep fish in your live well and recirculate. Now, if you're pumping fresh water through the system all the time, it doesn't do any good to put any salt in there because it just flushes it right out. But when you're making a long run or in the really hot summertime, when we recommend that you use recirculating aeration, you want to add a little bit of salt because just like people, the fish's blood is saline.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you put a little bit of salt in the water that they're staying in, it helps them kind of get over that stress. And it's a good practice. Fish haulers, you know, fish farmers and hatchery people use it all the time. And the recipe is pretty easy. It's a third of a cup to 5 gallons of water. And what I always did was I would pre-measure it in a little Ziploc bag. And that way I don't have to worry about weighing it out or anything. I've got it all ready. So as soon as I need to add salt to the live well, I could just dump the whole bag in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got it pre-measured in the right amount. But again, every boat's live well is going to be a little bit different. You need to know how much water your live well holds. And I would suggest you don't go by what the manufacturer tells you. Get a 5-gallon bucket or something and measure your own live well, because some people say, oh, my live well holds 50 gallons of water. I guarantee it doesn't. So you need to make sure at the operating level, when it's full to the overflow, figure out how much water is really in that live well, then figure out how much salt you need. Now the next question then is, what about the chemical that you can buy on the market?
Right.
We, bass, and all of the other state agencies do not recommend any of the commercial products out there on the market, because they all contain ingredients that have not been approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration for fish that might be released and eaten by somebody if they get caught again.
Ooh.
It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with those chemicals. it doesn't mean that they're dangerous or that they're harming the fish. It's just that they haven't gone through the testing to verify that they're safe for human consumption. So we can't recommend them. It doesn't mean they don't do some good things. There's some products on the market that actually do some good things. But without that FDA stamp of approval, we can't recommend them.
Makes sense.
Salt is approved. Oxygen is approved. Mm. Ice is approved. So it's a pretty short list.
What about Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew is not approved. Although, you know, there was a study done, and here we'll go down that rabbit hole.
All right.
There was a lot of people have heard about the idea of pouring Mountain Dew or Sprite or something on a fish that's bleeding.
Right.
There was a study done in Canada last year. They actually used Northern Pike as their test subjects, but it's the same concept. And they used Mountain Dew, they used Coca-Cola, they used several different carbonated soft drinks.
Okay.
And they found that putting the fish back in the water, as soon as you unhook it, stop the bleeding as fast as using any of the soft drinks.
Okay.
And the other thing we don't know about using the soft drinks is, yeah, they stop bleeding, the carbonation, and it constricts blood vessels. But when you pour that stuff down the fish's gullet, we don't know what else it does to that fish. Yeah, it may stop bleeding, and yeah, that fish may be alive when you get to weigh in, but what happens to it 2 or 3 days later? And that's kind of the whole tricky thing about this, keeping your fish healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my next point, was the whole concept of delayed mortality, which is, from a biologist standpoint, that's the really important thing that we need to look at. It's not how many fish get released. It's how many of them survive 3 or 4 days later. How many of them survive to spawn or be caught again? Fishermen, when they release the fish, if the fish swims off, they assume it's going to live. And that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
Even to trained biologists, we can't always tell whether a fish is healthy to where it will survive long term.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they swim off, that's not a good indication. And that's why it's so important for, you know, people say, oh, I've never killed a fish. I've never weighed in a dead fish. My live well is the best. I use this equipment, that equipment. What they don't know, they have no idea, is what happens to those fish 3 or 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the studies that we did back in the 90s, where we came up with the whole concept that became the Keeping Bass Alive booklet that we wrote, that's for Bassmaster.com. Those recommendations are all based on keeping those fish alive beyond the release, not just getting them to the weigh-in.
Okay.
And because that's what's really key. I mean, if we want to sustain our fisheries, we've got to make sure that those fish live long-term and have a chance to spawn and be caught again. Obviously, those fish are recyclable. They can be caught again.
Yeah. All right, real quick, because a couple of people have asked this. We touched on this yesterday. Real quick, Gene, could you go back and give the short version of what people should do to clean out their live wells and how often?
Cleaning, really, the cleaning out part is the easy part, is to use hydrogen peroxide. It's safe for the fish. It's safe for the equipment. It's not going to rust a bunch of stuff. It'll clean off the slime and the goop that builds up in your live well. Get a bottle of it, pour some of it in the live well with a little bit of water, and run your recirculating system and make sure you get it through the whole system, through the pipes and the plumbing and the hoses and tubes and stuff like that, not just the physical live well. If you have to get in there with a little scrub pad or a brush or something, that's fine. I don't get real crazy about cleaning the live well, because as soon as you put lake water back in that live well, you have introduced every type of bacteria, fungus, and parasite that lives in that water.
Yeah.
And it's already gone back into your live well. The main thing is keeping it clean makes it smell better. And you don't have a buildup. You don't have stuff growing in there that you know, you don't want to have that anyway. And then you don't get things clogged up, you know, get all the scales out and that sort of stuff. But hydrogen peroxide is the easy thing to do. And, you know, if I wouldn't put it on a schedule. I wouldn't say that you do it after every tournament or something like that. It's pretty obvious. You open the lids and things stink. It's time to clean the live well.
There you have it. Now, I was going to tell you this. The whole Mountain Dew thing kind of cracks me up a little bit, and I understand the concept. Strangest thing I've ever seen anybody do when I was in the boat during an event, they poured Red Bull. And I turned to the dude, and I was like, dude, what are you doing? He goes, oh, it'll keep the fish jacked up all day long. I was like, are you out of your mind? What are you doing? Yeah. Red Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, the fish makes it to weigh in all jazzed up, and then as soon as it's released, it has a heart attack.
Yeah. So please don't do the Red Bull thing.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this, Gene. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and I'm going to flash up the phone number. And folks, you know, one of the issues that I've had with this whole return and everything being obliterated here in the studio is for some reason the software that we're using now, it doesn't recognize music and the music sounds weird. But when I play music, on a standalone system and record it to the hard drive, it sounds crystal clear. So I have no idea what's going on with that. So if you're wondering why the bumper music sounds like crap, that's why. So we'll take a break, come back, take some phone calls with the Hall of Famer, Gene Gilliland. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Elite FS puts the full range of Lowrance fish-finding tools at your fingertips. Find fish with active imaging 3-in-1 with Fish Reveal. Target fish with active target live sonar and watch fish react to your lure as it happens. Built-in C-Map Contour Plus charts make it easy to find key fishing areas. But best-in-class charts and powerful sonar is only the beginning. It's easy to build your fully networked FS system, from sonar and waypoint sharing to controlling the ghost trolling motor and power poles. Lowrance Elite FS. Targeting fish just got easier.
Basscat's legendary 20-foot platform has been paired with angler-approved accessories for 2021. Puma FTD features the proven hull used by many of the top names in bass fishing today, backed by a transferable lifetime warranty. The Puma FTD boasts a full team deck concept which enhances efficiency for you and your tournament partners. Turnkey tournament-winning performance. The Puma FTD SP from Basscat.
So, you're looking to buy fishing electronics, huh? Are you also looking for true experts to help guide you through it? Well, at the Bass Tank, you've come to the right place. We are live forward-facing sonar pioneers with thousands of hours spent learning through winning trophies, cashing checks, and just having fun. Whatever brand you need, we have it. We offer free shipping, and we have two financing options available. Our experts are here to help you. Call us today or visit thebasstank.com.
Preparation is key to success. And that preparation starts well before you ever hit the water. You're only as strong as your connection to the fish. And your line is that critical connection. Confidence in your line every minute of every day on the water is a necessity. And failure, it's not an option. Sunline makes the fluorocarbon, nylon, and braided lines to give you the strength to guarantee your confidence.
I've made my living on the water for over 20 years.
For 14 years.
For over 23 years.
I've worn a bunch of different clothing brands over the years.
Some companies big.
And some companies small.
All of them said they were making clothing for us.
But none of them knew us.
None of them were us.
Except for one.
Except for one.
Except one.
AFCO.
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 Fishing isn't part of us. It is us.
Everyone, Brandon Palnick here. People always be asking me what I got tied on. I'm like, X-Zone lures. And they're like, Brandon, why you got X-Zone lures tied on? And I'm like, let me show you why.
The bite.
Get out of there. Get out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, freaking.
Get in here.
Oh, God.
giant.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
I think you get the point.
Everybody loves to chase bass on the water. But is your most valuable asset protected when it's not on the water? Empire Covers can preserve your bass boat against even the harshest conditions. When the storm is coming, that bass boat needs to be protected. Check out EmpireCovers.com for all your cover needs. Empire Covers is the ultimate solution when it comes to protecting that asset. Empire Covers is the ultimate solution in easy protection for your truck, for your boat, for your car, anything that needs to be protected from the elements. BTL listeners can receive free shipping plus an extra 15% off their entire order on EmpireCovers.com. Just use the promo code BTL at checkout. Empire Covers, protect what you love. All right, we are back on a Wednesday with our good friend Gene Gilliland. There, shut that music off. I know it sounds weird. I'm sorry. Working on that fix. Anyway, real quick, I want to let everybody know, Monday, Sean Goodwin, the former BFL All-American champ and a guy that's been doing this game for a zillion years, is going to be live in studio. So we got him rescheduled. I'm working on getting Jimmy Washam rescheduled and then Justin Hamner rescheduled. So that's kind of the plan for next week, but definitely have Sean booked for Monday and looking forward to what's going to happen over the next few weeks. So, Gene, question?
Well, one of the, you got an email that was sent in. Derek sent in an email asking about a device called a cool well, which was a device that actually pumped water out of your live well, and it ran it through a cooling coil that you had in a separate compartment where you kept ice, and then ran it back into the live well, and it was thermostatically controlled so it could control the temperature of the water in your live well. I don't know if they're still making these things or not. It's a great idea. Charger boats used to have something similar to that. Nitro used to have something similar to that as an option on their boats. It took up a storage space because the cooling coil was inside that space, and you had to put ice in there with a little bit of water. It kind of made a slushy, and periodically during the day you'd add more ice.
Mm-hmm.
But it the little thermostat would turn the pumps on and off, and it could maintain that temperature in your live well, so you didn't have to constantly be adding ice or putting in water jugs or whatever. So it was a really pretty neat idea. I don't know if they're still available or not. I doubt that they sold a lot of them, which unfortunately in the industry, if you don't sell enough, you go out of business.
Yeah.
And there have been a number of devices like that over the years that have kind of come and gone, that some of them were great ideas and they really caught on, but most of them kind of faded because they just couldn't sell enough of them. The one gadget that's out there from a live well standpoint will be maybe our last issue on the fish care stuff. There is a device that's a little vent that goes in the top of your live well. It's called a VT2. TH Marine sells them. And all it does is allow the hot air in the live well to escape and fresh air to come in.
Hmm.
And as you're moving down the, either with the trolling motor or when you're running the boat, the way the thing's designed is that it forces air in on one side and the bad stale air out on the other side of this device, and it sits flat flush on the deck. It does a really great job of ventilating the live well. That helps keep the water a little bit cooler, mm-hmm. and it gets rid of all the nasty gases and stuff that build up in there. Because anybody that's ever fished in the hot summertime, if you've had your live well lids closed for any length of time, when you open that lid, you can almost feel the heat coming up out of that live well. This little vent, and they're only like $40. And it's it doesn't cost, there's no power, nothing. You just drill a hole, screw it in, and it works. So the VT2 is something to look for.
Pretty cool. I forgot to mention this yesterday. I was going to get your opinion on this. one of the more creative things I've seen people do over time is there was this guy, he was from Kansas, and I can't remember his name, and I remember seeing this from one of the old Nation things. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he would fill up not the big water bottles, okay, but the small water bottles that are about this high.
Yeah.
Okay, about, I don't know, 4-5 inches high. And 3M made this weird kind of interlocking kind of Velcro, but it wasn't Velcro. And he put that on the bottom of his LiveWell in little squares. And then he would put the other side of the Velcro, it's not Velcro though, of this interlocking stuff from 3M on the bottom of the water bottles.
Right.
And he would take them and he would stick them on the bottom of his LiveWell. So the entire bottom, and I'm not kidding, folks, were kind of like bowling pins.
Yeah.
All right. He had these little bitty frozen water bottles, and I thought that was a pretty cool idea. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that, you know, that's going to keep the big water bottle from sloshing around in there and banging around. So, I think that would be an interesting idea, just to have them attached so that they're not sloshing around in there with the fish. That sounds like a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, he was ready to go. He had, you know, I looked in the live well. I was like, what's in there? It looked like bowling pins at the bottom of his live well, man. But they were frozen, and they lasted a pretty good while.
Yeah.
You know, and then in his ice chest, he had more that had that 3M material on the bottom of them. He just took them out, put them back in there. So
there you
have it, folks. Gene-approved concept of the tricks of the trait right there.
Creativity.
Yeah. All right. You see the number, 405-253-5543. If you want to give us a call, ask Gene a question. We will take your phone call. Hopefully everything will work, and we will move on from there. I do want to mention this. If you do want to call, get it in quick. Today I kind of have to wrap things up right around the half-hour mark because I got to get this video board fixed. All right.
Got a game Friday night.
I know. And it really is cool. First time that the school is going to be featured on the Fox network. So it's a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. One of the questions, and this is a good one. What can you tell the fans about when a hook, like on a Carolina rig, all right, is deep and you cut the hook off?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, can you elaborate on what happens to the fish, and is that the best thing to do, to cut that hook off and leave it in there?
It depends on how quickly you think you can get the hook out. A lot of people have seen these little diagrams, maybe they've even tried it, where if you go through the gill openings, if you can reverse the hook to where it's upside down, with the eye of the hook coming out through the gill opening, then you can reach in through the mouth with your long nose pliers and grab the bend of the hook, and it'll usually pop right out. The idea of leaving the hook in the fish, if it's gut hooked, in the past when everybody said leave it in there, it'll rust out. Well, now most of the really good hooks are coated to prevent rust. And so they don't rust out as quickly, if at all, compared to previous generation hooks. So if you can get the hook out without doing a lot of damage to the fish in the process, then it's better off to try to take the hook out. And obviously it's something you need to do quickly, because as long as that fish is out of water, it's holding its breath. And they can only hold their breath so long before it starts to cause problems. So if it looks like it's going to take a long time, then cutting the line and leaving it in there may be your only option. But we're starting more now to recommend trying to remove the hooks because they don't rust out like they used to. And, mm-hmm. and if the fish has that hook in its gullet or in its stomach and it doesn't rust out, then it's a blockage. And that could cause problems with feeding and digestion and all sorts of things later on.
All right. Several questions about culling clips and culling hardware. What's the best version to use in consideration of the fish, taking care of the fish?
We Bass mandated the non-penetrating culling clip several years ago because the kind, the safety pin kind, the metal pin that poke a hole in the fish, if you install those correctly, right up next to the jawbone at the very tip of the snout, the metal pins are not as damaging. The problem is most anglers, when they put those in, they don't pay attention. They just stick it in there, and you wind up with a big, long gash under the fish's mouth. And when you cut a hole that big or a slit in that fish's mouth, it affects their breathing and their feeding because, you know, bass are suction feeders.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's a hole in there, they can't create that suction as well, and it causes problems. And it may not kill the fish, but it certainly is going to affect that fish's fitness going forward. So we started promoting the non-penetrating or the clamp-on style clips. They did a study in Florida with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission where they found some problems with some of the clamp-on styles. There are some that ratchet down really tight and pinch really hard. What they found was that causes bruising, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. But also, when that thing is clamped on tight, the fish is irritated and they're constantly trying to shake them off. And that can actually create more tissue damage. So what you need to look for, there's a couple of kinds on the market that don't close all the way. They still lock, so they don't come off, but they don't pinch hard and tight against the fish's mouth,
okay.
or the jaws. So look for that kind. The other thing that it's good to, if you can get away from them, the little floats that are up on the top of the ropes, of your mm-hmm. culling ropes, you need to, if you can live without them, take the floats off. Because a lot of times those things are getting tangled up in the live well, and that's creating more stress on those fish. If it's just got a rope or a tube or something, it's not going to get tangled up. You still know which fish is which. Maybe they're color-coded.
Yeah.
But it's better off that way. You're just releasing some of the stress that those fish are going under while they're swimming around in the live well.
All right, let's try a phone call. Let's see if this is going to work. Hey, you're on BTL. Who is this?
Hey, is this me?
Yeah. Who we got?
Hey, this is Chad from West Virginia. How are you doing today?
Chad, doing well, man. What's on your mind?
Hey, I had a couple questions for Gene. Recently, me and my daughter were fortunate enough to make the Bass Pro Shops U.S. Open, and we're going to be fishing Table Rock. Haven't ever fished there before, and I was wondering if you had any fish study websites. I know they do shocking and stuff everywhere to view populations and species and things of that nature. And then second part to that question is, if I was going to go after a state record in Missouri, better chance of catching a 14-pound largemouth or 8-pound smallmouth or spotted bass?
All right, man. Thanks for calling in.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it, Mark.
All right.
Man.
All right, take care. All right, Gene.
The short answer to the Table Rock question is I don't know that there's going to be a lot of information out there. With so many people fishing for $1 million, there's going to be a lot of people pretty tight-lipped about what's going on at Table Rock. One thing that they have done over the years at Table Rock, and Johnny Morris and a group called the Friends of Reservoirs and Missouri Conservation have put in hundreds of fish attractor brush piles, rock piles, stump beds, that sort of stuff. The Missouri Department of Conservation website has some information on the habitat improvements that they've done in Table Rock. They put over $1 million worth of habitat in that lake. A lot of people think, oh, those are just for crappie fishermen. They're not. A lot of those structures that they've built are really bass magnets. And so one thing I would suggest if you don't know much about Table Rock is to go to the Missouri Department of Conservation website and look at their habitat. They've got maps that show where all those things are, probably GPS coordinates. You might even be able to load into your sonar unit to be able to find those locations.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing side of it, that, like I say, that's going to be a lot tougher information to find with $1 million on the line.
So what did he say, an 8-pound smallmouth or a 14-pound?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
I think both of those are probably a little unrealistic to think that anybody's going to catch one. You know, that's on the smallmouth side, that's not far from the world record. the largemouth side, you know, who knows that, I don't know that either one of those is really, you know, when you think about state records, the places where state records are being broken on a routine basis are where Florida bass have been stocked.
Yeah.
The southern states, Missouri's too far north. The Florida bass stockings they've tried there have been dismal failures. So it's really unlikely that there's going to be a lot of places that have that. It's kind of the same way with smallmouth. There's kind of windows of opportunity in history where those fish grow up to the right size and anglers encounter them. And I'm not sure that, I sure wouldn't put any money on either one of them.
No. Now, can you verify, and I've had pictures on this show, but back in the day at Table Rock, you could go out and you could have a limit of spots that would exceed 25 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there are places that can grow big spotted bass.
Table Rock in the day, it was unreal.
Yeah.
How big those freaks of nature were.
And it's as these lakes age and the environment changes, the habitat changes, the forage base changes. Yeah. Like I say, sometimes there's those windows where all the planets align and they crank out these tremendous size fishes. But as things change, you get more and more fish in the lake, more competition for food, the growth rates slow down, you know, the planets become unaligned and then you don't have all those opportunities. And so it's very difficult to maintain that kind of productivity for a long time.
Yeah. All right. Let's take another phone call. Hey, you're on BTL. Who is this?
Hey, this is Brian from Alabama.
Brian?
Brian, yes, sir.
All right, man. What's on your mind today? Thanks for calling.
Nothing much. There's some music in the background I'm hearing, like through the phone. That's weird. But I was just calling. I live in Alabama, basically by the Coosa River, and over, I'd say, the last 10 years or so, the quality and quantity of fish caught has gone down as far as bass. I saw on Facebook one of my friends had made a post about restocking efforts, and he had actually tagged Gene. I was just curious if Gene had seen it or not, and if he did he have a response to it? I can hang up for the answer.
All right. Thanks for calling, man.
I appreciate it, though.
All right.
Yeah, John Norris, are you listening? Yeah, I saw the post yesterday. I didn't have a chance to respond. By the time I saw the post, there were like 90 comments. Fish stocking. I told Mark I wanted to talk a little bit about fish stocking, so this may drag us on a little bit. I hope not, because we're going to run short of time. But
carry on.
Fish stocking is not the answer in every case. In fact, it's not the answer in very many cases at all. Nature does a whole lot better job of providing the numbers of fish that we need. The problem with stocking is that if the natural spawned fish are not surviving, the little fish that you stock out of a hatchery truck are likely not going to survive very well either. Now, people say, oh my God, look at what Texas does. They stock all their lakes and look how great the fishing is. The lakes that get stocked in Texas and any of the other states, especially in the southern states, the stockings of Florida bass are for improving the genetic makeup of the population, not putting more bass in the lake. It's not to change the numbers. It's to change the potential for producing larger fish. So if a small number of those stocked Florida bass survive, 6, 8, 10 years down the road, there's the chance they will have more trophy-sized fish. Environmental conditions, whether it's water quality, water quantity, lake levels, habitat, weather conditions, those sort of things is what really drives the strength of the year classes from year to year in our lakes. And the other thing you've got to remember that we don't always have control over any of those things. We can't control the weather. Somebody else generally controls the water levels, the Coosa River. Alabama Power built those dams to make electricity. They didn't build them for fishing. And so fishing is a byproduct, and unfortunately, a lot of the things that they have to do to manage those bodies of water for power generation or flood control or whatever the purposes are, fishing is down the list and doesn't always get the top priority. So those things that we can't control are more important in terms of producing the fish population and keeping it going, some sort of quality there. Stocking fish is in, I'd say probably 90% of the cases around the country, stocking largemouth bass has not produced any real benefits in terms of more fish. The trophy aspect for Florida stocking is a whole different situation. Stocking the F1s, same situation. It's not for putting more bass in the lake. It's for putting fish that have a chance to grow up to be trophy size. So stocking, the other question that I saw a lot of in that thread were, well, okay, our bass aren't doing as well. We need to stock more food. Let's put more shad in there. Let's do this. Well, going back to that environment thing, if the environment is not conducive to having shad, shad are pretty prolific on their own. If there's not enough food for the shad, stocking shad doesn't do any good because there's nothing for them to eat. So you got to think about that whole food chain thing.
The cycle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, stocking is something that has kind of been oversold, in my opinion. There's just not a lot of evidence. There's very few places around the country. If there's a crash from a catastrophic event of some sort, sometimes stocking can come back in and help rebuild the situation. But for routine maintenance, if you want to call it that, or for chronic problems where the bass populations have been going down and the habitat and everything else is not what it was 5, 10, 20 years ago, stocking is not the fix. You think about deer or turkey. Habitat is the real key. And so making sure that we've got water quality, water quantity, the flows, that sort of thing, that's where the real benefit comes. Unfortunately, as fish managers, they don't always have a lot of choice in how those things play out. And you got to kind of live with what the authorities that own the lake are providing.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets a lot of play, and a lot of people always point at other states. Well, why don't we do what they're doing? Every lake is different. Every situation is going to be different. But in general, bass stocking has just not been as productive. A lot of people point to the Lunker program in Texas. That is purely to produce bigger fish, not more fish.
Right.
And that's why in a lot of places, we talked about doing one of those in Oklahoma years ago. And we're far enough north that we just wouldn't see any benefit from it in terms of the numbers of trophy fish produced. We still stock Florida bass in Oklahoma, and we do in a lot of the southern states stock Florida bass. But again, that's all about genetics and not about producing more fish.
Got it. Hey, you know what, folks? We could have Gene on for like 5 hours and talk about this stuff. But we've went over an hour, and we do have to cut out. But the good news is we're going to bring Gene back. We're going to kind of make it a regular thing here based upon Gene's schedule. So this will not be the last time that Gene Gilliland will be on BTL. It will be the last time that Gene Gilliland will be on BTL and not be a Hall of Famer. Because next week, the man becomes a well-deserved Hall of Famer. Hey, real quick, look at that.
There you go.
Our good friend Glenn Cunningham, longtime friend, sporting the, I don't know if you can see it, the Bass Zone Mobetta jersey. And he actually wore that. I don't remember what year it was that he fished in the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And he wore that jersey.
Mark, let me just say quick, if people have questions, I don't mind folks sending me an email. I don't want to get into big, long arguments back and forth on Facebook because that can go on forever. But if somebody has a specific question, they can always send me an email, and I'd be glad to try to answer as many of those as I can.
Yeah. Next time we're on, we will have a much longer period to take phone calls. It's been ringing off the wall, but unfortunately, we can only go an hour today. But we will have Gene back on. Once again, if you didn't catch yesterday's show, make sure you check out part one. If you want one of these Barb's Fizz Kit, Gene is the Fizz Kit broker right here. No, but go to the Facebook address. It's facebook.com/barb.elliott.127. And that will get you to the Facebook place where you can get that Fizz Kit right there. And if you can't, shoot Gene an email. He will be the broker on this, and we'll get you taken care of from a fizzing standpoint. All right, tomorrow, folks, the man returns. He's been gone for a couple of weeks. Yeah, he did the show on Monday, but officially a day four tomorrow with the man, Frank Scalish, and we will see what Frank has to say about the continuation of the fall transition. My least favorite time to fish, September. Gene, it sucks. I'm being honest. I don't sugarcoat it. I can't catch fish in September, so I don't even bother with it.
Well, you know, it was 49 degrees here this morning.
Oh, it was.
The water's going to start cooling off. We're going to have a turnover here before long, and we'll be back into the fall patterns. It'll get better.
All right. Make sure you check out the auction that is taking place for the Hall of Fame. Just go over to the Hall of Fame website, click on the link, and get your bids in. You can go fish with Matt. You can go fish with me. You can go bowling with both of us. Whatever you want to do, we're going to take care of you right here on BTL. So bid up and help out a great cause with the Hall of Fame. Gene, can't thank you enough, man. Great stuff. Can't wait to get you back on. And Frank tomorrow. So have a good weekend. Great. And you folks out there, tomorrow we will catch up with Frank and get ready for some more football. Oh, and by the way, I'm headed to Waxahachie this weekend too, so we might talk a little bit about that. So thanks for the phone calls. Everybody be safe. That is it. We're out of here.